I really loved other people's kids until I had my own kids, but that's a whole thing. So I don't enjoy them anymore once I had mine. But
wait, other people's kids or your kids?
Oh, well.
Moving on.
Welcome to Life Behind the Highlight Reel, the podcast that takes things beyond the curated life we all see online. Join hosts Sarah and William Huffman as they dive in with their friends to talk about the good and the hard things that come with a real, not perfect, life behind the highlight reel.
Hey, everybody. William here. And
Sarah.
And
Carrie.
Okay. So on this podcast, we like to go way back to when you were born.
But Will.
What?
Who do we have? Like the world
I suppose
just knows.
I should do an introduction.
Who is Carrie? Because are we talking about Star Wars, Princess Leia?
Princess Leia.
I look like it.
Yeah. No, Carrie Chang is the CEO. Is that the technical title?
Let's have Carrie introduce herself.
The Minneapolis Area Association of Realtors of MAR. So what does that mean?
Basically, I lead the association and the staff and work with the board so that we can serve our 10,000 members.
Nice.
And we're two of them.
Two of 10,000.
Two of 10,000. Here we are.
10,000 lakes. I have no idea. All right. So tell us about yourself, but don't go like to, I'm married, I have this and that. Like, go to the beginning. Where were you born? Where, any siblings? Where'd you go to school?
Okay. So where was I born? I was born in South Korea.
Okay.
That's all I know about that. I was adopted when I was like 3 months old.
Okay.
So I've been in Minnesota most of my life. Mm-hmm. I was raised here in Arden Hills, actually.
You were an East Sider.
Yeah, I'm actually, it's funny because I work for MAR, but I'm really like a St. Paul girl
at heart. Controversy right out the gate.
Yeah, because I didn't switch teams until I came back to Minnesota after being away for school and for some life things. And then I just ended up working on the west side of town. So
okay,
I moved
whoa.
I know,
whoa.
I skipped a
you
lot
skipped,
of decades.
Yeah, no.
Don't worry, Will will take us back.
Yes, because this is the fun stuff. So, all right, what's like your earliest memory?
Oh my gosh, I can't even think. But I'm thinking about what I was, so we asked about family. So I have siblings. So
okay.
I have a sister and two brothers.
Okay.
And I think some of my earliest memories are like in our old house and growing up and our house just being like chaos because we're all within 5 years of each other.
Oh my
so
gosh.
So it was like my mom was running a daycare and we're just all running
wow.
around and goofing off. And I feel like people were partial like stages of dress because it's like some people never got their jammies and then some people got like and I just remember us being loud and getting into everything and my mom and dad my dad was working and my mom was home a lot with us. She's a teacher but she took a bunch of years off because
yeah.
she mm-hmm. was raising four kids under
like you always hear of like two under two. Your mom had four under five.
Well, yeah, and then the funny thing is, too, because since I'm adopted, so what happened is my sister, so I'm the oldest, but my sister is actually only 3 months younger than I am.
Okay.
It was like almost like twins, because they had like sent away for me. I always say I'm like, it's like a baby catalog. They look in the picture. They literally, it's not like this anymore, I don't think. I'm not sure. But back then, they like looked at a catalog and they see pictures of babies, and they're like that one. And then like you suddenly your baby comes. So then I'm like in processing and coming, and then they got pregnant with my sister, and then she's born, and I come. So she was born in May. I'd been born in February, but then I show up mm-hmm. in July or whatever it is. So she always says, she's like, well, you might be the oldest, but I was here first.
Oh my.
And then we were the same grade in school all along, and so, but teachers didn't put together two and two that we were
sisters
because yeah. why would you? Because she's white. Mm-hmm. And I should have said that part too. I'm adopted and my family's white. And so my maiden name was Johnson. So
okay.
it was like, oh, the Johnsons. And in Minnesota, there's a million Johnsons, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you wouldn't assume we're related at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and the way they'd figure out is when my mom would come to parent-teacher conferences and show up for the one appointment. And then the teacher would be like, it's time for the next one.
And she's like, I am
your next one too. And they'd be like, wait, what? And they'd be like, well, this makes sense now because I see those two sometimes fighting. And like, oh, and it's like, yeah, because they're sisters.
They're sisters.
So there you go. And then my two brothers came after that, so.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's a good story. I cannot believe it. So really, you practically have a twin sister. And then mm-hmm. were your brothers?
Yep. So then they had my brother 3 years after. And then the next brother, like, not even 2 years after. So, so that's how we're all bunched together.
Wow.
And it really is. I just think it's crazy, which you hear these stories a lot where it's like, they adopted me because they were having a hard time having kids. Mm-hmm. And that happens all the time. And then you adopt and all of a sudden something happens and it's like all these babies come.
Yeah.
And my mom would have had more too if my dad would have let her, because they wanted like a big family. They just always wanted a big family.
Well, five is so pretty substantial.
They're like, we want four. Four.
Four. I can't
count. She would have had more. Yeah. But yeah. They were like, this is enough chaos. We're good. And so then, yeah. But it's good because I always say, well, that's like how I ended up here.
That's
so
amazing.
Where did you go to elementary school?
Yeah. Island Lake.
I don't know that
in
one.
In Shoreview.
Mm-hmm. Shoreview. Did they have a mascot?
Kind of by Lake Johanna, if you know where that mm-hmm. is.
Yeah.
Island Lake? I don't remember any mascot. I'm sure they do, but I do not remember.
Where'd you go
to
high school?
They even had a song. Like, I remember our elementary school even had like a fight song.
Do you remember it?
No. God, no.
Oh, if somebody knows it, that'd be great.
I feel like there is something.
Oh, this is great.
Island Lake is great as can be. Something. Teachers, family, and friends in harmony. Oh my gosh, why do I remember that?
This is amazing.
Things come to us in this room.
That's weird. So I went to Island Lake, and then I went in Shoreview, and then I went to Moundsview High School. Okay. Moundsview Mustangs.
All right, hold on. The Fighting Mustangs. All right, hold on. All right, so.
So this is how Will podcasts. He's very like.
I want to know the chronological stuff. Like, see, we just found out you remembered the fight song for some reason.
Yeah, that's weird.
You haven't thought of it probably, 20, 30 years, if not longer.
I didn't remember what happened last Thursday, but hey,
this is why it works.
And that's how old people's brains work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So okay, so we're in elementary school. What type of a student are we? Are we a good student? Are we a troublemaker? Like, how are we acting?
I think I was probably an average to above average student in my academic endeavors, but in my behaviors, I was medium.
Would you like test the limits?
Well, I think I was just hyperactive, and so I would get in my report cards notes that said like, needs to pay more attention, needs to stay quiet when the teacher's talking, keep hands to self, like too social, shocking. And so that was all the way until pretty much sixth grade. And then also I was super disorganized. And so I would like get my assignments, take them home and work on them, and then forget them at home. Mm. So like not get credit.
Yep.
Or, which is why I say I'm like, I was average to above average, because I think if I'd have actually turned things in.
You would have been above average.
On those things, I might have mm-hmm. been doing well, but it was kind of one of those where it's like just not having my stuff together. And my mom would get me like a planner, like write down your homework assignments so you remember, and then like don't leave your things in your desk that mm-hmm. you actually need at home to work on your homework. And then I would lose the planner. So she'd be like, where's your planner? And be like, I forgot that too.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was kind of a hot mess. And then something happened later in middle school where I decided like, oh, I care now. And then I feel like that's where things changed. But, there's a story that even one of my teachers, my math teacher, who shall go unnamed, apparently was like trying to put me, I don't think they do this anymore, I don't know, but they had like tracks for the different things. And he was trying to put me in the regular track for math. And my mom went and talked to him, I guess. I found this out much, much later. And was like, nope, she is ready to do the harder math. Like, why are you trying to hold her back? And I think it was probably because of maybe some of the lack of focus.
Disorganization?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that it took me forever to learn my times tables. Like forever.
Really?
Yeah. I still don't know a lot of them.
Yeah, I don't either. Like, my husband will shout out like
seven times seven.
Something, and then
49. You want to know why I know it's 49? Because I know 6 times 7 is 42, and I just add 7. There are certain ones that I can remember, and there are certain ones that I can't. Like, 9 times 9 is 81. 9 times 8.
Well, 9s are the easiest.
I don't. Why?
Because there's a trick.
Okay, see, when people say that, you sound like my husband, because says that too. And I'm it's not easy. It's like you're frozen.
Say, like, it's 9 times 3. So you go 1, 2, 3. It's 27.
Oh.
So like 9s are the easiest.
Nine
so like
8 is.
But then you have to use
81.
Your hands.
72. Oh. I will totally do that.
But then you're literally a grown up using your hands to do math.
I have no shame.
Until you memorize it.
I do it under the table.
Yeah, no shame.
But no, that's like 9s are the easiest. You've got your hands.
I did not know that. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
That's very kind of you.
You know, you did marry a former teacher.
Yes.
Elementary teacher.
Elementary, my dear Watson. Okay, so we are in elementary school, and we're just getting along. We're great. We're doing well-ish. And then all of a sudden, like 6th or 7th grade happens. What switches?
I don't know. I think a lot of kids, I have kids that are teenagers now, and I think I saw it too. It's like that developmental age. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you were learning about kids that age, you start getting more aware of things outside of you,
mm-hmm.
and you start thinking about your future in a different way. Like mm-hmm. when you're a kid, it's just like in the moment, and like you never think you're going to grow up, or at least I don't. You're just like, I'm having fun. I'm doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start realizing, wait, so this keeps going. Like I'm going to keep advancing through life mm-hmm. and going to harder and harder things. And like, what's going to happen to me? And I think I did. And I started just reading more and learning more about, oh, okay, so these are the things that I could do when I get older. And if I want to do those things, I hope that I will be able to have a lot of choices. So
and don't you think at that age too, you kind of learn what your interests are? Like we're like in elementary school and you're reading because that's the level.
Yeah, you're
level.
Doing it
because
they told you to.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
But then
yeah,
all of a sudden it's like, yeah. oh, I'm actually interested in this. I want to learn more.
Yeah, that is true. It is, and you start figuring out like, oh, there's things I actually could be interested in doing besides like being a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I started realizing maybe the things I'm interested in will require me to actually like focus and do my job.
I don't comprehend that track of thought. In middle school? Oh, my word.
Well, Will, you did seventh grade twice.
Yeah, that's okay.
And
it's not about me, it's about Carrie. All right.
I think when I was in seventh grade, I was telling this story to someone that I started reading the Wall Street Journal when I was like 13.
What?
Which is strange and not at all normal.
I have it. No, that's not normal. I have the WSJ like edition. It's sent to me every day. Like now in the, what's that called? The phone? The email?
In the mobile version?
Yeah. So, I mean, I look at it every day, but I'm 42. And I just started that.
Oh, no, and I don't read it every day now. I mean, I was reading it because, well, one, I was a kid, so I mean, I actually had time. Two, so the thing is, so my dad was in business, and so he would have, like, that coming to the house or business week, which I feel like isn't a thing anymore, but mm-hmm. that used to come. And I would just pick it up and start reading it. And then I got really interested in all of the articles, like, learning about them. And I was like, well, what is this? And this was in the 80s, too, right? So the mm-hmm. 80s was all about all that, right?
Oh,
like,
yes.
Oh, I thought I was going to be like a Wall Street trader. I was definitely going to do that.
Oh, really?
That, yeah. So I started figuring it out, and then I started looking at like, well, what kind of colleges would I go to? And yeah. What would I have to do to be?
And this is in seventh grade?
Probably seventh grade. Yep. Seventh, okay. Because I remember in seventh and eighth grade, our middle school was only 2 years at that time.
Okay.
And they had a study hall. And during study hall, there were all those periodicals up on the table
yes.
to pick from. And I always grabbed those.
And what did your friends read?
Yeah, people didn't. I don't think. Well, there was one friend I had who he and I were like, would nerd out about it together because he was into that too. And we would talk about like stock trading and how we really wanted to start investing in stocks with our allowance money. And so, yeah.
Okay, random question, but I think it's interesting. Since you and your sister were in the same grade, did you have the same circle of friends or were they completely different?
No, we did when we were young. Because when we were young, of course, all your playdates are together and you're like doing stuff together. Plus, you're the same brownie troop and the same Girl Scout troop going to the same camps because, you know, it was nice. You had like a built-in friend, right?
Yep.
So like every time we went to summer camp, you didn't have to go alone because there's your sister. But then you'd get there and we're different personalities. So we would make our own friends. Plus, I do think, which I've heard about twins as well, is like when you're with somebody that way, it's like you really want to have your own identity mm-hmm. and you want to like be known mm-hmm. as not just a part of a pair. And that was easier for us because we didn't look alike, right?
Yeah.
It's harder for our friends that mm-hmm. I knew that were twins. Like, so I think, so we didn't run in the same circles at all. Plus, listen to how I was. Like, that's not.
I'm like, was your sister reading Wall Street Journal?
No, she was like being what I would think of as more of a typical kid.
And she was reading 17.
And then she was looking over there like, what is this?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there wasn't a lot. Yeah, there wasn't a lot in common at that point. I kind of took off on my own path.
I have more questions, but Will, how quickly can I speed up through our chronological order?
Where are you trying to go next?
Where did you go to college?
No, high school. We got to go to the high school.
Well, we already answered that.
Because
the Mountain View Mustangs.
No. Okay, now in high school.
Were you in clubs? Were you in sports?
Were we in, yeah, like what did we do in high school?
Oh, well.
Did we get in fist fights?
So I think I can't even remember now. I think I was in band in middle school and then maybe freshman year. I don't remember. No, I think I dropped out by then. I played the saxophone. I thought that was really cool. But
I thought you would have been the flautist.
No. Because I felt like that was too dainty for me.
See, the D is coming out now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like,
on the disc profile, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did the saxophone. I thought that was cool, except for that I'm not good at music and I didn't practice enough to ever be good.
Okay.
I did play piano pretty much all through my childhood and high school because I actually, like, enjoyed that. But I never played competitively except for when I was young, and then I hated that, so I quit. But I played for enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, in high school, so I did sports. Like, I ran track and I played volleyball because that's the D. I'm, like, pretty competitive. People at work know. They're like, oh, Carrie, not everything is a competition. Like, when we do, like, team building stuff, and I'm like, okay, it's not a contest, but then in my head, it totally is.
I am going to dominate you.
Yeah, I'm like, it kind of is one, but, or like we did this trivia contest and he's like, okay, I need to be on a strong team because I'm not good at trivia. And I was like, but I want to win. And then people felt like the pressure because they're like, okay, we know she actually wants to win. I was like, no, this is for fun. Not at all.
This is fun.
Like, yeah.
You all better win.
I have a question. So if you were going to do a trivia draft at Mar, who's the number one overall pick?
Ooh. But I know.
That's hard to say because actually, we have a lot of what I call like renaissance type people at Mar, like people who shock me with the breadth of the stuff that they're into and that they know. And a lot of people were smarter than me in terms of just like world knowledge. Mm-hmm. I can like do a thing, but I'm not that kind of smart. And so people like David Arbit would be one.
He was my
sure,
top pick
because he's a renaissance guy.
He's up there.
Right.
Yep.
Like he doesn't just know data. He knows a lot of things about life. And I think actually working with him too, Jackson Pino and Eric Myers.
Oh, yeah.
And you think about those types of people, their jobs. Right. It makes sense that they're just like into world interests and they just know a lot and they retain a lot of knowledge. And that's my issue is I did a lot of things to get A's, but I don't retain as much knowledge. Mm. So it's like I have like street smarts and then the book part is kind of, I get a pass
harder
because of my pedigree from school, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Sarah, like, don't ask me what I learned.
Who would be the number one draft pick for AGLG?
Oh. I'm thinking.
I know I have my answer because I kind of the same thing.
Well, I have two.
Take your time. No pressure.
Right, because what you want for trivia is someone who has
are
a
you
wide
included?
Breadth of knowledge, like not deep. Right?
Are you included?
Yeah, I'm included.
I would pick you.
Oh, see, I would pick Matthew.
He was my second pick.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
I would be last pick.
Probably.
Yeah,
because
me too.
I am really terrible at trivia.
No, I'm dead weight. Yeah. I mean, that's the best part is I want to win, but I'm contributing nothing.
Yeah, I cheer.
Oh, I talked someone out of the right answer once.
That was awesome.
Tell me more. How did you talk somebody out of the right answer?
It was a team, you know, trivia, like how when you do the bar trivia. Like except for this was like not at a bar. But we were doing this team trivia, and the and we all shared what we thought it was, you know, in our thinking time. And then everyone's like, yeah, okay, it's that. And then I was like, I don't really think it is, though. I think it's this. And so then that person deferred to me, and then we were wrong, and it was the other answer. And I was like, dang.
Great leadership skills because the people believed in your leadership and they followed you. They just followed you down the wrong path.
Yeah, which I always tell people actually in leadership. I was like, I have a title. That does not mean I know anything. And so you need to tell me because you know things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just here to listen. And if I start, but I'm a D. So I'll share my view and it sounds like I know what I'm doing.
Because you're very confident.
Very confident
when you
whatever
share it.
We say.
That's exactly,
extremely confident.
That's my husband says that. He goes, how do you just say stuff that isn't actually a fact, but you say it like it is one? And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, because I'll say like, well, you know why that's happening. It's because blah, blah, blah. And he's like, is that really even true? Is it really like a science thing that I just made up on the spot?
Yeah.
I'll be like, no, but it's intuitively, it makes sense to me. So I'm like, no, I'm saying it like that's the truth. And then he's like, I don't think that is. And he's like, let's look at Google.
Let's Google it.
And
yeah.
I was like, before Google, I got away with a lot more. Yeah.
And now we just have to fact check everything.
87% of stats are made up on the spot.
I'm like, really? Should
I
Google that? I was falling for it.
See how confidently I said it, though?
Yeah,
yes.
It is. It's all in the, I mean, that is, it's all in the delivery.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Okay, so now we're in high school, and we've given up on woodwind instruments. The saxophone is to the side. We're still playing string, because, you know, but we enjoy that.
Yep.
Now, in high school, like, did you already know where you wanted to go to school?
Oh,
did
yes
you get in any trouble?
Because of my reading, I had really figured out. I was like, oh, no, and then I was not in trouble anymore. Like, after that was the end
you
of it.
You had direction, you were going.
Were you the kid who didn't miss any days of school? Did you get that award?
Yes, first of all, knock on wood, I've been really lucky. I don't know why, but I just don't get sick, like, very much at
all.
Nice. And I've always been like that. So there, which I say, now I look back and I'm like, it was mental fortitude. It's like, just don't let it happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and I certainly would never have skipped school because I was a rules follower. Like, after the whole, I don't know, whatever, something happened in puberty and my brain changed, all of a sudden I was like, I'm following rules now. Mm. And I decided that I would be really proud of that. So it's like, I'm just going to be a big goody-goody and I'm going to do everything right. And like, which I think is actually really typical of oldest kids, right? But my parents were not it's not like they were putting any pressure on that. Mm-hmm. I was the only one of the four of us that turned out that way.
Interesting.
Which I always think is like nature versus nurture. I always think it was just like inside of me. Mm-hmm. And so I just got hyper focused, and I was like, after I'd been reading all my different periodicals and looking at the, I looked at the rankings of colleges in
most of us call them magazines.
Or newspapers.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like,
periodicals.
I'm like really old. So I researched and I figured out like, okay, what are the top schools for if I want to go into business? Mm-hmm. And then I figured out, oh, I have to get an MBA too. So I was like, what's an MBA? And then I read about that, Masters of Business Administration. And I was like, I want to administer business. So then, and this is all when I'm like 13 to 15, right?
I was going to say, this is probably like... Yeah. Really younger than most people would think about this.
Yeah, and I, oh no, I had mapped
it out. That's one of the reasons she's so successful, though.
I was, yeah, obsessive. And so then, when I figured out that one of the top schools at that time, which that must have been the early 90s by then, for business school was at Northwestern University, Kellogg School of Management, I was like, well, that's where I'm going to go for my MBA. And so then I worked backward from there. It was either there or Harvard, because those were the two top ones. They had been alternating back and forth during those years. And I was like, well, one of those two. And then I was like, therefore, I want to go to Northwestern University or Harvard undergrad, because that's the path. Like, that's what I'm going to do. So... then I just decided that's what I would try to do.
So where did you go to school?
I went to Northwestern.
You did?
Yep. And wow. I did not, well, this is a little interesting insight too, is I did not even apply to Harvard or any Ivy League schools, which many people don't. But for someone who was like me, that's odd, because you would think, if you want, and if you're competitive, if you want to go for the best, why aren't you going for the best? Mm-hmm. And even my guidance counselor at school was like, you should consider those. You might actually have a chance. And I was like, And keep in mind, I'd been going down to the guidance counselor. Best friends.
Do you want to give a shout out?
Because, no, you know what's the weirdest is I cannot remember. Like, I can remember the school song from elementary school. I cannot remember for the life of me his name. And he, and I can picture his entire face, and he had these glasses. And he was really funny, too, because I think he, now I wonder as an adult looking back, I'm like, when what must he have thought of this strange child coming down all the time? Because I would come down to get, because back then, right, no internet, because I am a little older than you two probably. So then
internet was just at the cusp for us in high school.
95, yeah.
Yeah, because I graduated in 98, Will graduated in 99.
I guess so.
Oh, okay.
Because he repeated seventh grade twice.
Yeah. So we had no internet, that didn't exist. And we, well, that's not true. Prodigy, like, anyway, we dial-up modem became a thing right around then. But to learn about colleges, you had to go to the guidance office and actually get paper copies of the pamphlets and brochures they left.
Oh, yeah.
So I went down all the time to see if new ones had been delivered. And then I also had to obsessively check my class ranking, because back then they used to, they would share that with
you. Posted in the hallway.
So,
didn't they used to post it in the hallway?
No, it wasn't public. But so you couldn't see anyone else's, but you would be able to go and get a little printout to see where you were. And so after grades came out every semester, I had to see if I had knocked anyone out.
Our high school, I swear they used to do this when I was there. You would have your student ID number, and then it was in order, and you can see your student ID number, and you could see that some. I thought it was maybe not.
Oh, wow. Well, some you probably could. I mean, honestly, it's a little different now, because I think we realize maybe how traumatizing that could be for kids, and we try to be different. But back then, it was like, yeah, well, whatever. Life's a competition, and just everybody get in there and suck it up. But I did go down all the time to find out. And so between those two, So that's kind of, but I didn't end up applying for those schools. And my parents were pretty hands off and like, you do what you want to do, apply where you want. And so I picked Northwestern because I really felt like that's a really competitive school. Mm-hmm. It's on my list of like the path to the MBA, but I feel like I have a really good chance of getting in. And Harvard and any other Ivy League, I was like, I might not get in. I might be rejected. I don't know if I can handle that. And so I think just little 17-year-old me was like, yeah, I'm not going there. Because of the way I'd been, I really hadn't had a lot of like failure in high school, right? And in academics. I had plenty of failure in other aspects of my life because, you know, like that's a child who's a little imbalanced. So I was like, this is the thing I'm really good at. I can't screw up that. It's like it was too fragile, right? Like, what will that mean if I apply and I don't get in? And so I didn't, which I still regret, not because I don't like where I went, but because I think it would have been a good experience to apply and then not get in somewhere. So I actually did, fast forward, I actually did do that for business school, and I did apply to Harvard Business School, to HBS, and to Stanford, and I did not get into those two places. And Jerks. I lived.
And you're still here to
and
tell
I
us.
Yeah. And I didn't even, it's so funny, because I think it's one of those, so I must have been, what, 26 when I applied to business school, and I remember being so anxious and so nervous about it. And then when it happened, I remember getting the letter and knowing, I know I didn't get in because it's the thin letter, you know, the little envelope. And
you didn't get the letter.
Big one. And I was like,
you didn't get the packet.
I think I kind of knew that might happen and I'm okay with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, like you're also several years older, more mentally mature and, you know, more prepared for something like that.
Did you stay at Northwestern, though, for your MBA?
Yeah, I did. I ended up, well, so what happens is usually you go to undergrad and then you work a few years and then you apply to business school so that you have some real world knowledge before you go back in the classroom. And so that's what I did. And I did get into Northwestern for my business school.
Okay, so you were in Northwestern for, what, 6 years then total?
Yep.
All right, what happened? Like, did you, is that where you met your husband? Like, was there any cool things that happened? Or were you just, like, in the library working or, like, tell us about college.
Were you doing like keg stands on Saturdays?
Well, so this is kind of funny because, yeah, what happened was a little bit since I was so, you know, focused in high school and, you know, towards this just achievement oriented, like towards this goal. Once I got into the college I wanted to get into, it's kind of like all bets were off. Because what happens is, you know, you're a teenager and you're like developing. Yeah. So, if you don't do that there, you're going to do it somewhere else.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened is I got into Northwestern. I was like, oh, okay. So, like, I can take a deep breath. I can kind of decompress. And I got there. And I did. And it's a great school. I mean, I had a really great time there. But also, it was just, I think, I call it, like, delayed adolescence. Because since I really wasn't a rebel at all in high school, and I was so down to business with things, and I'd been looking forward to college as like, this is the thing. Then when I went to college, it was like, oh yeah, I'm going to all the parties.
I'm doing,
doing
it
all the things. I think I went to the library like 3 times. It was just because I finally realized, I think, I was like, oh, like, I can do things and have a life. And, you know, and in high school, it's not that I didn't, I mean, I wasn't actually, I studied a lot, but I actually did have a lot of fun because I was in sports and I had my friends and I had a social life, but it was just, it was different when I got to college. And, you know, and I never really tested the boundaries in high school because honestly, I was having fun without it. Like, I didn't need to, but then when I got to college and you're just around everything and you're like, oh, and you meet so many different people and you're figuring out who you are.
Yep.
So yeah, I did. I had actually a lot of fun in college. And I, of course I wanted to get good grades cause I knew I wanted to get into grad school, which then you need to actually care about your transcript. But similar to like what you were saying earlier, I found my passion and it was a course. I thought, okay, business, economics. So I studied economics and it turned out for me, it was like, it just made sense to me. And I feel like that's what happens when you get into a profession or into a area that is a fit. It's like, I just lucked out that the thing I thought I wanted to do, I wanted to do. I always tell that to my kids because it's like, you're not supposed to know what you want to be when you're 13 or 15. That's super unusual.
Besides like a marine biologist or an astronaut.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It's like, I know. And then, you know, to actually be able to do the thing that you thought you wanted to and that you have an affinity for it, your brain thinks that way, was lucky because I, you know, I just, who knew if that would even be a thing? But I took one econ class in high school and I remember thinking, this is really fun. I want to do more of that. And then when I got to college, I actually just really enjoyed that. And since it made sense to my brain, I didn't have to study as hard because it wasn't like calculus, which was, my freshman year, I had a calculus class. It was like Calc 3, which who even needs 3 levels of calculus? Because I'd already taken some in high school. And, but that was like required at the time was to take more math. And so since I'd already taken so much math in high school, I was like, I guess I'm taking the uber math. And it was impossible.
Is that where like one problem?
We are so opposite. Is that like I took one econ class and it was hard for me to stay awake. And I took one math class, the required math in college, and I got a C.
C's get degrees.
And it was, I worked so hard for that C. Like it's actually a class that I'm actually proud that I finished. It was so hard.
Is calculus like where one problem can take like 2 hours?
I mean, depends on the person. It probably could.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. The answer is for us, yes, absolutely.
It probably could.
No, Will, I think you're much stronger at math than I am.
Moving on.
Thank you. That's a compliment, but I don't believe that. So I forgot to ask. So you were volleyball in high school and what other sport?
Track.
Track. Mm-hmm. Okay. So were you good at them or just?
Not really. Okay. Which is why I was saying like I didn't have failure in other in my academics because mm-hmm. that's in my mind. I was like, right, that's what I'm going to be a superstar at. But mm-hmm. then sports were just for me, just like music. Like I wasn't particularly talented at music, but I loved playing. And the same with sports. Like because I'm competitive, I liked doing that. And volleyball, especially because it's a team sport and just
yes.
being a part of a team. I've always loved mm-hmm. that. And the friendships. And like, I feel like I'm still friends with some of the people I played with then.
That's
and,
cool.
And I like the physical activity yep. and just being healthy. And so for me, it was, I'm only 5'2", right? And so in Minnesota, girls volleyball, by the time you get to high school, it's like you're going to see people who are 6 feet tall. Like you're
yes.
definitely going to, and you're not going to have a lot of success blocking at the net when you are 5'2". So I kind of could tell too, I was like, okay, my future here is limited, but I'm going to play as long as I can and really just, you know, enjoy it. And then that's why I track too, because I felt like, okay, track, everyone can run. Mm-hmm. Now, not every one of us is going to be that fast, right? But I was fast when I was younger. And then I would say, so I did sprinting, and then I started pushing myself into longer distances, mm-hmm. Partly because I could tell, okay, so like as I get older, and this happens a lot of times for girls, you go through puberty and you get slower. And I was like, oh, what's happening here? And so then I was like, well, maybe I need to try more middle distance. So I did that. But neither of them, I didn't letter in either sport. I loved track, and I did it the whole time. I quit volleyball after JV junior year because then it's like you either go to varsity or you don't.
Yep.
And me being me, I was like, well, I'm not going to be a senior on JV. I need to
take yourself out versus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I was like, I can do track. Plus, that's the time when you're doing, you know, college applications and getting really intense with like.
So do you still run?
You're doing. If someone's chasing me.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
My joints don't want to run anymore. Also, really funny is I did this thing. I just remembered it because we're talking about running. So when I was in track, also one of my friends tried to recruit me into, when I started doing longer distances, into cross country.
Oh, that's running. A different breed.
Okay. And I was like, I don't know if I can do that. So I was like, I'm going to try. I want to know, can I do it? So I started training. And what you have to do is you train over the summer for the season in the fall. And you have to do all these long distance, for people who don't know, like cross country, right? I mean, you're doing long distance races. Up to that point, I'd been running maybe like a 400 meter dash, right? It's like, okay, so,
right, yeah.
And then
different.
Maybe you're working an 800. And at that point, I'd never run a mile race before. And I didn't even know, like, what's that going to be like? So I started training with them for the whole summer and that summer. And you had to track, you had to do a run log and like track it. And so all summer long, you're in the weight room and you're doing runs and you build up to these long runs. Some of the runs were 10 miles long, I kid you not, when you're training.
And you did them?
In the summer. And yes, I did. I mean, I was not in the front. But I was running because I was like, it was more like I just want to know, can I do it?
Yeah.
And so I got super fit, which I've never been that fit again in my life. But I think it was, again, it was like this team, right? It was really fun because it's like we're all out there and we're just like setting a goal and we're trying to do a thing. And for me personally, too, like a personal goal around like, okay, can I really do this thing that I never thought I could do?
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And then I did not actually end up joining cross country. Like after I did all the training in the summer.
Really?
And I got ready and everything. I was like, you know, I don't think I'm actually wanting to do the sport. But I wanted to prove that I could do.
You could do it.
All of the work. And so, and my friends were like, that makes.
Hard pass.
No sense.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, for me that, because it's all about like, what is it you're trying to achieve? And I guess to me, because I knew, I was like, if I go into cross country, I'm not going to win anything. I'm never going to beat anyone at a 2 mile race. Like that's
and there's the
happen.
Competitive spirit
and I'm not
coming
gonna,
through.
Yeah, and I was like, I really, but what I can do is work harder than anyone else, you know, put myself out there and do a thing. Mm. And so, and prove to myself that I can do it. And then I'm good. Then I'm kind of at peace with myself. Like I don't need to actually go compete in a thing that I already know I'm not going to be good at. It's like,
but you know that you can do it.
But I need to prove to myself that I can at least, because I control, and I still say this to my team too. I think in life it's like what I've kind of come to realize over time, right, is like you control the inputs, you don't control the outputs.
Correct.
And I was like, I just need to have, and I am, my husband will tell you, he's like, a little controlling. And so it's like, I just need to control what I can control, which is like the inputs, and demonstrate to myself that I've pushed myself as far as I can. I don't need to always see the output, because especially when I already know the output's not going to be at the level that I want to be at, then I'm good. I don't need to do that.
Okay, question. When did Mr. Chang come along?
Oh, yeah. So you were asking about college. Not until much later. So we met.
What? You skipped ahead.
Well, I wasn't sure if this was a college story. It might have been.
Okay, so hold on.
Because we're up to 26.
Okay, yep. So what was your first job?
So coming out of undergrad,
You didn't have a job in high school?
I had jobs. My first, I babysat a bunch, right, for like neighbor kids, and I loved babysitting. I really loved other people's kids until I had my own kids, but that's the whole thing. So I don't enjoy them anymore once I had mine. But
wait, other people's kids or your kids?
Oh, well.
Moving on.
No. It's something that weird biologically must have happened to me, but like once I had my own, I was like, I don't need to be around other people's kids. Yeah. I really don't. When I was younger, I loved people's kids. So I like actually in college, I part-time nannied. But in high school, I babysat. And then my first real job with like a paycheck was at, I can't believe it's yogurt, which doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
I think it got bought out by like TCBY or somebody.
I can't believe it's not yogurt.
It was at Rosedale Mall because that was like by my house, right? Okay. In my backyard, right? And I really wanted to like get a job and earn a paycheck. And I was 15, so there were limits to on how much you could work because, you know, you can't have that many hours when you're a kid.
4th grade to 7:30 or whatever.
Plus, I couldn't drive, so I had to have a ride to work. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how much does my mom, who has 4 kids, really want to be chauffeuring me around to earn at the time? It must have been like $3 or something, minimum wage, $3 an hour, which now you kind of, that dates me. But, I really wanted to do that, and I did not do that long. I did not like it. Food service is rough, I'm sure, for anyone who has done it.
I have never done it.
Because the pressure of the crowd, there'd always be a long line, and then I would just be like, okay, because you just want to be like on top of it. And not all your coworkers feel that way. And so then you feel
especially
like,
at 15 at the yogurt store.
And so then, and also back to the math challenges, the other thing I wasn't good at was counting back change, which is going to be a severe career limiter if you are working the cash register at the yogurt place. Because the crowds are building up, right? You can just picture it. There's me like breaking into a sweat, trying to count the change back and then doing it wrong and having the customer get angry. That's not pull. Because keep in mind, this is when cash registers weren't smart like that.
Oh, they didn't tell you the amount
they
to
sure
give.
Didn't. No, they did not. And so I would like try to practice out because I'd be like, okay, in the moment, in the spotlight, I'm going to freeze up. And then three people behind that person are going to overhear how I screwed up the change. And then that person's going to, and customers sometimes aren't nice. And then that person's going to be mean to me. And I'm going to just have to like muscle through it. And so, after a while, I was like, maybe this isn't the right role for me. Oh, I also tried, I had a very brief stint at Gymboree, which is a kids clothing store, which I think still exists. Back to the me liking kids. And I thought that'll be fun because people bring their kids and their babies in here and I can like dress them up. Oh no, it was bad.
That's retail.
It was bad.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I can't sell. And in retail, like you get your shifts. So it wasn't commission based, but you get your shifts based on your productivity.
Mm-hmm.
My productivity was not good. And do you want to know why? Because part of selling is you have to approach the people in the store and cross-sell them. Would you like some socks that match that outfit? Do you want? Did you know these go together? And there was a whole selling practice. You know, all these places have their thing, right? Of like what you're supposed to do. I could not do it. I really felt like I was intruding on that person when they're just trying to shop and get their things done. And that look they give you when you try to give them the upsell.
Approach. Yep.
And you're just like, I'd just back away. I'd be like, yep, you go on about your business. And at the end of the day, then the manager would be like, well, you didn't sell that many pieces because they're looking at like how many pieces did you sell and then what's your average, you know?
Ticket item, ticket
kind
price.
Of basket. And I'd be like, well, it was kind of a slow day. And she'd be like, but you had like 5 different sales. And so, but each one only had 1 or 2 pieces. And she's like, were you asking? Were you? And I was like, they didn't really look like they wanted to be approached.
I didn't want to bother them.
Yeah, I felt like that's the Minnesota in me too, is right? Like, I'm not going to get in your face. I'm just going to wait. And like, I'll be like, do you need any assistance? And if they're like, oh no, I'm just looking. I'm like, okay, good. I'm backed off. I'm good. And I'm like, and you're selling nothing.
Yeah.
So then I eventually started getting so few shifts and on the deadest times that I was like, I think I need to leave because I'm not actually going to, I'm not going to be able to have a real job here. Like, what am I working 3 hours a week? So I was like, I need to do something different.
On the whole change thing, it wasn't too long ago. I was buying something in cash, and it was $10.50, and I gave them $21, and it's like I confused them. Like, the world had just come to a screeching halt. Why did you give me $21?
So you can get $10.50.
They went to they hand me the dollar bill back, and I'm like, no, I want a $10 bill back. And like, their mind was just blown. So I took the $9.50, then I took the $5 and $4, and then another dollar, and gave it to them. Said, may I have a $10 bill, please? I thought maybe the light would have went off. No, it's okay. It's a lost art, especially these days with cash.
Well, and kids today probably can't make change at all. And I would argue we can't. Like, even that thing you just said, that's exactly the kind of thing that would trip me up at the yogurt store. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dang you, yogurt store.
Yep. And they look at you like, and I'm obviously smart enough to know when I see someone's face. It's not like, it sounds like that person maybe didn't pick up on the fact. Like, but oh no, right away I would immediately be like, I'm ashamed. Like, immediately shame hits because you see their face and you know they're looking at you like the lights are on but nobody's home.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm actually a smart person. I just can't, under the pressure.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so we went to 4 years of normal college, then you're 2 years of
normal
MBA
college
or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so now we're out of college. We graduate. Do we take a gap year? Do we go right into the workforce?
What do you think? Do you think I took a gap year?
No,
right
I
into
don't
the
think
workforce.
You did. Yeah, I don't think you did a gap year. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a pretty on the path. So I got recruited to work at Accenture, which is in their strategy services group, which is like business consulting, management consulting on business strategies. It's a lot of PowerPoints, a lot of analysis, that kind of thing. And I went into that instead of Wall Street, like I had initially thought. I did apply for jobs at like Goldman Sachs and things like that because I thought Wall Street
that was
calling.
Yep.
I need to do that. But I also, so the two types of jobs I applied for at college were investment banking and then management consulting. And the reason was investment banking was interesting because it was what I always thought I was going to do. Mm-hmm. It involved money, and I really was interested in money. And then I'm less so now. And then management consulting, because I felt like what I learned about that career, which I didn't even know that was a career when I was a kid, but when I got into college and started learning about it, what's cool about it is it delays you picking a career, because really what you're doing is your job is going around to all kinds of different businesses and studying them and then helping make recommendations to them about how they can make their business better. And so I actually thought the way my brain works, it was like, I really like that because it's intellectually challenging and stimulating. It's different every day. And you work in teams. And I was like, cool, I want to work as part of a team, right? And so that's where I actually ended up going into. And then out of Chicago. So I stayed in Chicago after I graduated and worked for Accenture. And then that's where I met my husband.
At the company?
Yep.
Or
yep, because
consulting
because he worked there as well. He was already there. Because he was there post-MBA and I was there post-undergrad. So we have a pretty good age gap between us. Because you were asking, like, did we meet in college? Oh, no. He was, like, already a full-grown adult. but then we met in the workplace because when you're in that kind of job, too, the thing is you go to your clients pretty much 4 or 5 days a week.
Okay.
And so we got assigned to a project team, and we're traveling on the road together Monday through Thursday for, like, a year, maybe a little more than that. And you work really long days. Like, you're in the office until sometimes, like, 10 p.m., midnight, whatever. And so just in that, because you're always, it's all about billable hours in consulting.
I was about to say, because, it's billable hours.
Right? Yep. And so, like, you're always working, and then you're also under usually pretty tight timelines, because part of what they're trying to do, bring you into is, right, you're working on either turnarounds or helping them change something significant in their business. And so because I always say it's like proximity is like 99% of the battle. So we were just around each other a lot. And I think, you know, became really good. We were actually friends long before we dated.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
So who asked each other out?
Oh, he asked me.
Okay.
I don't ask people out.
Yeah.
Because let's go back to fear of rejection. Oh. Like, I think people think it's like, oh, you're traditional. And it's like, oh, no. I mean, that worked in my favor because back then women didn't ask out. The girls didn't ask the guys out as much. I mean, some were, but that was not the norm like it is now. Like, now I hear that it's actually even more the women than the men. And I was like, oh, my God. Thank God I was born when I was. I would have dated zero times.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I just was that type of person. I'm just going to wait and see if he crosses the room.
Yeah.
maybe if I look like I'm interested, and it's like nobody's picking up on those signals. Yeah. Or if they are, they're not interested. Kind of like a gymboree. So it was, my dating life was similar to my experience at gymboree, actually, now when I think of it.
No add-ons. Yeah. Like,
not doesn't clearly give it off vibes. He doesn't want to be approached. I'll just stay back.
The store wasn't too busy today. Yeah. Kind of dead. Yep. Oh my
so,
gosh.
Nothing. So yeah, so then he, what happened was we were friends and hanging out so much. And then, and when we weren't on the same, in the same company, because then what happened was I left and went to, this is in 99, 2000, right? And so the whole dot-com thing's taking off.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I left Accenture and went to internet startup consulting strategy. So they were consulting businesses like Kraft, and like, actually I worked for Philip Morris. That's a whole,
oh yeah,
that was interesting. They were one of our clients. Doing internet strategies for them because the internet was new and businesses didn't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
And Fortune 500 companies didn't have whole teams about it. They were like, what is this thing on the internet? What should we, what is e-commerce? And so I was like, cool, I'm going to go do that. I can try something out, and startup-y is really interesting, really small company. And then, so once I had left, then he approached me and asked me out, because even though people could date within the workplace, it definitely, because he was several levels above me, because he was more senior at that point, it was just, it would be better not to, right?
Yep.
And especially for me, I would say, for my career, because the last thing you need is like people thinking that you're getting ahead because you have some kind of relationship.
Yeah.
And I was really sensitive to that too. So anyway, then after I left, he asked me out, and then that was kind of that,
and then the rest is history. And how long did you date before you got married?
I think we dated 4 years, maybe 3 years before he proposed. And then, yeah, I think maybe 4 years total, because we were engaged for like a year.
Okay.
Because I was, by the time we started dating, I think I was still pretty young, maybe like 23.
And was he from Chicago, or where was he from?
He was from Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
O-H-I-O.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. That was absolutely ridiculous.
You can't even like try to get that.
Do you think we spend a lot of time together?
Oh, that was pretty good.
So, Dayton, Ohio, and Minneapolis, or St. Paul at that time.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. And I thought we would, when we were dating, and we both really loved being in the city, I thought we would stay in Chicago.
Yeah.
But he, it was his idea to come here.
Okay.
So, yeah, so Mar has him to thank, because I really thought I'm going to go to B school in Chicago and stay down there and graduate and stay down there.
Yep.
And when we started getting serious, he started talking about we should go, we're going to get, well, he was very confident. So he's like, we're going to get married, and then we're going to start a family. And when that happens, we should be near family.
Were you engaged at the time when he said you're going to get married?
No.
Oh, he just knew.
No, he, yeah, I think he felt like he knew way before I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I didn't really know until we, like a year after we were married. I was like, okay, this might work.
And now how long have you been married?
Well, actually this summer it'll be 20 years, our 20th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. I can't, it's gone really fast. Like, we always joke because we're like, 20 years feels like 200. But then it's like, also feels like two.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of life has happened. And yeah, we're just lucky that we still like each other. Like, we really do. And I think, I always say it's because we were friends first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the romance part is, you know, I think that's important, but it is also a part that gets, it changes over time.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you introduce kids into it. But even I've heard when you're an empty nester, it's just different. And so to have had already where it's like, but we actually enjoy just doing stuff together too. Mm-hmm. You know, that, I think that's what has gotten us through times where you're like, this is not romantic right now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, but you're my best friend, and you're the person I want to go to and I want to talk to, and you're the person who is like on my team. And I feel like that sense of that started way before we were married.
Married.
That's really cool.
I like that.
All right. So how did you, I mean, okay. So when did you guys, you met, and then when did you get married? And then when did you like have children, start a family, move to Minnesota, like,
yeah. So so he proposed when I was in business school, because I think, right, because that makes sense, because that's when you're about to start getting recruited again for jobs. I could have gone back to, you know, you could go back to your past employers or that kind of thing, except for I couldn't, because mine was that internet startup, which went like this.
Yeah.
And so I also knew I wanted a career switch at that point. I was like, I want to get out of professional services. I want to work in a corporate setting, like a real company that makes something or does something.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And be an operator. Because the difference was, right, I was kind of in consulting, that type of consulting, you say it's like ivory tower. It's like you're just looking at things and analyzing them and telling other people what to do. Mm-hmm. But you don't get to see if your ideas actually work. Right? Because you leave them the recommendations and then it's
and
up
then
to
you're
them
on to the
implement
next.
It. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And
yep.
I was in the part of me, maybe it's that control, but there was a part of me that's like, but were we right? Like, I just want to know, was I right? Did the things, were the things that we were recommending actually viable and did they work? And mm-hmm. that would, I felt like for me, that would create more fulfillment to be able to be the one
yeah.
in the driver's seat and deciding things instead of recommending things and then watching the client bungle it and be like, oh my gosh, that's not how we meant to
from conception to execution, you wanted to see yeah. the whole thing through.
Yeah, and have responsibility, because that's the other yeah, thing is
absolutely.
I could mm-hmm. keep moving up in consulting, but I was like, honestly, when you get on that path, at the top, you're a salesperson. At the mm-hmm. end of the day, when you're a partner in one of those firms, just like a partner in a law firm, you're not practicing your actual craft anymore. Now you're selling. You're doing biz dev mm-hmm. all the time.
Yep.
And that's how you're comped. And that's what success looks like. And back to my early learnings about me in sales, right? I'm like, I'm a good yep. doer. I'm not going to be a seller. So yep. then going into corporate, I knew I wanted to do brand management because I'd had a bunch of client work that was about marketing and brand management. And I loved consumer packaged goods, CPG, we would call it. And so I was looking at like Kraft and Quaker and that stuff in Chicago. And then when my boyfriend now, you know, husband, or at the time, I guess when I was looking, he was probably already a fiance, because then I think he realized like, why would I go anywhere with you if we're not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he really wanted us to be like that. And I was kind of more comfortable with like, well, we could just keep dating. But which is, yeah.
He had other plans.
Yeah. Well, and also the age difference, I do think I was just young. I was super yeah. young in my mind. And I was like, well, why would I settle down now? Mm-hmm. And I don't need to. And he was like, well, I don't want to be a 40-year-old with a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. Okay, we can compromise. And so then hence he proposed before I graduated, and then we got married right after I graduated business school. And then I was lucky enough to get a job here at General Mills. So that's
okay.
what brought me back here.
Okay.
And
nice.
He was already working at Target. So he had an opportunity to come up here and work for Target. Well, at the time it was Marshall Field's.
Yep.
You know, when they used to be
yep.
their own separate thing. And he had said, you know, I feel like that's a really great opportunity for me. And I was like, just go and do it. We weren't engaged at that time. But I was like, if things are meant to be, then they're going to mm-hmm. happen.
Yep.
And if they aren't, they aren't. But, you know, it makes no sense to make career decisions with each other in mind when we don't know.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, I feel like it's Minneapolis to Chicago. We flew back and forth to see each other all the time.
It's yeah.
like,
it's such a quick
every
flight.
Other weekend. Yeah. And I was like, we'll make it work. And honestly, you're going to be so busy with work and I'm so busy with grad school. Like, we see each other the weekends, which is what
yep.
we did. But then, yeah, then I was like, I'll give it a try. I came up here for an internship in the summer between my 2 years in B school. And I really loved it. I loved the company. I loved being back here more than I thought I would.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because of family, right? Like, my folks are still here. My sister's here. And so, like, I just felt like, oh, this feels like the different from the Minnesota I grew up in.
Yeah.
Plus Minnesota had, I mean, years have passed. And I think some of my memories of what it was like when I was hanging out at Rosedale Mall and you know, working away at
yeah.
Mountain View High School, right? Like, Minnesota became a little more open and
yep.
a little more, like, it just changed a lot. I mean, it still is pretty provincial, was certainly then. But for me, having lived in a bigger city, which is what I thought I wanted, and then coming back, I was like, actually, this feels comfortable too. And
yeah.
And the trade-off of giving up some of the fun things about a big city was more than made up for too by having like the family around
yep.
and having a more, I would call it like a slower pace of life and an easier lifestyle
yeah,
for sure.
Well,
mm-hmm.
just even getting around.
Yes.
You know, like Chicago is just, like, I think Minnesota, Minneapolis is just such a, it's a perfect size city. Like, you get the Broadway shows, but I don't have to spend an hour in traffic or try to find a subway or the L or whatever
exactly.
it is.
Exactly. And that's what I, you know, as a young person, when you're young and single especially, I really didn't care about the convenience factor.
Yep.
But it was Jin. He had the foresight to be, my husband's name is Jin. He had the foresight to say, like, yeah, but fast forward when we're older and we have kids, hopefully, you know, that life is going to get harder in many ways. And you're probably going to have to, and you won't be able to afford to live in the city anymore and have your kids at some, you know, private schools or wherever you're doing. And he's like, you're going to end up moving out to the burbs. And in Chicago, that's an hour commute each way. And then it's like, you're never going to get into the city and enjoy the things that you think you love right now about the city. Cause I was living in the city at the time. Right. And he's like, if you're going to live in the suburbs, you may as well go anywhere then.
Yep.
Like the suburbs here are no better, no different than the suburbs in Minnesota. So just, you know, make the move. And so we did. And yeah, now here we are many years later.
I have questions. So you've been at MAR for how many years now?
It'll be 4 years in April.
Awesome. And what are you most proud of since you've been there?
Oh my gosh. Lots of things. I mean, I think really the team that I've built, we were talking a little before the podcast. I mean, for me, right, it's kind of back to like, what is my job? What do I think my job is as a CEO? Mm-hmm. And it really is to lead the team and to build a team that can carry out the mission and the vision of the organization that the board helps set. And I feel like I've done a lot of work and focus on the people and the team and getting folks into the right positions where their strengths can shine, bringing in new talent where, you know, maybe there was an area we wanted to get after that we really never had the right match. And so, and that's been a lot of work, but it's so fulfilling to see that and to build like a team dynamic too, where it feels like the kind of place people want to be.
Who's your least favorite?
Really? Will Huffman. Next question.
David Arbit. I'm going to take him first in the draft for the trivia, but I absolutely can't stand the guy.
Just can't stand that guy. Yeah. No, I mean, and you guys know because you're so involved at MAR, but it's hard to, it's such a great group, a diverse group, and just really special. I mean, everyone says this, I'm sure, but I feel like we just have really special people who have chosen to join us because of what we're doing, because of the vision that we have. And that's the other part I'd say I'm proud of, is that we've really codified a lot of the wishes of what the board had. You know, people say, oh, Carrie, your vision is. And I was like, it's actually not me. Because again, it's similar to with the staff. It's like, I see my role as the connector and the person who coalesces and brings together. So when I got hired by the board, right, that's 22 people who all have some different perspective and view of what MAR should be. And my job is to try and distill that down. And actually, you know, shout out to William for serving on the strategic planning task force on the board last year, because you know from being in the sausage making, it's like, it's hard to do that. Everyone's got different views. Everyone, and yet strategy.
Different priorities.
And when I always say, when I learned, when I was doing strategy consulting, I mean, in my formative years, all the way through when I was running businesses at General Mills, is having a good strategy means saying no more than saying yes.
And absolutely.
Being strategic is hard, not because it's intellectually hard. It's hard because of the discipline it takes to hold yourself accountable, to not say yes to all the cool new things or the pressures that people want to put on you that, well, this is my pet thing. This is what I like. And it's like, leadership is about getting everyone to feel heard, even if they don't get their way every time. And how do you and how do you get people to buy into each other's ideas too? Like, it's not even about my idea. It's like, you know, I think that's the art to it.
Like true collaboration.
And you know, and really being able to stay focused when the world wants you to be not focused.
Wow, that was some
I'm gonna like put that one on repeat.
Knowledge bombs.
Dave, can we do a short?
Yeah. Okay.
That was really amazing.
Are you a big reader?
I used to be. I'm more of an audiobook and podcast.
Listen,
person
okay,
now.
So am I. Yeah. So like, what are you
I
listening
just
to?
I fall asleep when I start trying to read.
Yeah. I'm with you. So what are you listening to these days? Like, what are your go to like people or artists or authors? Excuse me.
Well, so I'm kind of a loser because most of the things I'm listening to are like businessy or leadership books.
We're not surprised.
Yeah, if you look at mine right now, absolutely, it's all like, yeah, like Jeb Blunt and Simon Sinek and
I know you guys are John Maxwell folks. And I love his podcast. I love the Maxwell Leadership podcast. I also love, there's a podcast called Coaching for Leaders by Dave Stachowiak that I have turned so many people in my organization onto because he has the best guests he's gotten. He's got a really nice way of interviewing that just
what's the name again?
Digs deeper on the insights. Coaching for Leaders.
Coaching for Leaders with Dave who?
Stachowiak.
Stachowiak,
it's spelled
okay.
Kind of, it sounds different than it's
we've
spelled.
Got it.
She already found it.
It's pretty high rank because, I mean, he has a lot of followers. He has a leadership academy, actually. And then book-wise, actually, so I got a shout-out for our incoming, our new president, Jerry Moskowitz, mm-hmm. our board president, because he recommended a book called Trust and Inspire by Stephen Covey. And so I Dr. read Covey. That mm-hmm. book. Read it.
You listened, yeah.
Amazing. It was so good. So
Trust and Inspire.
Yep. I really enjoyed it because it's all about, you know, shifting your paradigm around leadership from the old ways that many of us, I was brought up in the old
Oh, I suppose, especially going to B school, yeah.
Well, I mean, look at how I was, right? Yeah. It was all about command and control. Mm-hmm. They tell you the rules, you follow them. They tell you the path, you do it. Mm-hmm. You know, even though there's quite a bit of degrees of freedom and empowerment in my consulting work and at General Mills, at the end of the day, it was still very much like, this is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And today's folks, that's not what it is.
Right.
And so that book really challenged mm-hmm. my thinking, and I really enjoyed it.
Just
that.
Bought it.
Cool.
Trust and Inspire.
That's
and
awesome.
Then I do sometimes like to read for fun and listen to things. And like,
are you a crime junkie?
No.
Twilight?
You know, I like, it's like junky stuff. Like, I just like, it's like totally, and sometimes some things that'll just get you thinking deeper. So like, it actually got turned into a mini series on Hulu. I think it was Little Fires Everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So I listened to that and I really liked it. There's like, so those kind of books too are fun, but honestly, I feel like I've been super deep into a lot of business and leadership mm-hmm. books mm-hmm. more lately. Oh, and Brené Brown, I have to say. Mm-hmm. I mean,
oh,
all those books.
Yeah.
All of them. She's, Dare to Lead, if you haven't looked mm-hmm. at that. That's
We have.
That
I had a meltdown.
Was one of my faves.
I had a meltdown during Dare to Leave. Dare to Lead.
Is that the show? Are you kidding? Okay. She was watching the miniseries of whatever whatever. It was a show or a TED Talk or something like that. Brené Brown talking.
Oh,
going
her
through.
Netflix special.
Yes.
Yeah.
I went to bed. I got up in the morning and I was in trouble. Because Sarah was mad at me. Or,
no, I actually got mad at myself because it was her chapter on resentment. Hmm. And how the reason, and this really irked me so bad because I have, like, resentment is one of the things I have to work through because I'm in.
Because you really resent Will?
At times, I can.
Yeah, right?
Because I'm, so we're going to take it to the DISC profile.
I woke up in trouble, that's all I know.
So I'm an S on the DISC profile. And S's will oftentimes not speak up in time. But instead, what we do is we'll carry little resentment pieces until that becomes like a mountain. Where if I could just address it right away, then I'm not carrying resentment.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
when
you
she
gotta get it out,
yeah, you just got to get it out. And I've gotten much better at this in the last year and a half,
significantly. Yes.
But so she
ties.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel safe at home?
Help me.
But that chapter on resentment like struck a chord because all of a sudden I had to take accountability for why I was feeling resentment. It wasn't about the other person anymore. It was about how my boundaries and like how I wasn't saying no to enough things or putting myself first. And that it was honestly, I was envious of what the other person had or how they held their boundaries.
Yes.
So all of a sudden I was like, oh crap. Like resentment's my issue.
Yes.
It's not because of the other person.
Yes.
So when
she goes deep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
But it made me so mad at first because I wasn't ready to take accountability.
Seriously, I'm getting up at 5 a.m. and there's Sarah just scowling at me and then she's riding her bike and I'm like.
Like angrily on the Peloton.
Anger exercising.
Yeah.
Revenge exercising.
I'm like, what the hell did I do? I'm thinking, what did I do wrong? Like, it's very possible I did.
Yeah, and then don't start guessing because now you're just outing yourself.
Oh, yeah. I am really good at pleading the fifth.
Yeah. We'll just turn silent.
Is there something you want to tell me? No.
Yeah, that's the best part when the other person's obviously upset. And what's wrong? Nothing.
Yeah.
You're just like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, so this Brené Brown, The Dare to Lead, is a great book, but it did, like, be prepared to have
some stuff.
Oh, yeah. It does. That's what I liked about it. It makes you, you reflect on some things and you're just like, ouch.
Yeah.
You're like, yep, that's me. Oh, I do that. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have that problem because I'm so,
You're more of a
comfortable
D.
expressing my needs, mm-hmm. wants, feelings, mm-hmm. But learning to be around others who have yes. that is important. And then, you know, we have our own things. D's do.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I think this is a good spot to kind of wrap it up for the day.
I love it.
This has been so interesting. I need to know, though, we finished the podcast with asking people their top five restaurants. So they can be anywhere in the world. They can be no longer with us. They can be whatever you want. I've had somebody say Taco Bell, and it broke my heart. And I've had somebody say
Olive Garden.
Olive Garden. But it's not because necessarily the food. It's
it might have been the experience.
He was there. He always took his mother there. He still takes his mother to Olive Garden. That's their time. So we'll start with number five. No particular order. Number five.
Okay, I'm thinking like local. Oh, so there's a Chinese place called Szechuan Spice. It's at Lake and Lindale. And actually, we just had it not that long ago, our family. We all love it. It is the best. Like, I've
What's your
tried
order?
A bunch of things there, and there's never anything bad. So Szechuan Spice, go there. It's takeout only now after COVID. Like, Ooh. They never went back because they do such a good business takeout. We used to go and actually eat there and, like, sit down, but now we just do takeout. But they're awesome. And my favorite order, so actually, they have this thing called, do you know what soup dumplings are? It's a Chinese, so they're dumplings, but they have soup in them. So So, okay, you need to try this, because I know you guys are foodies.
Yes.
And soup dumplings, you can get them in other in the coast. They were there. This is the only place I know of that serves them here, but they're like, it's like a dumpling but with the meat inside, but also soup broth. And so
Yummy.
They're like, this time of year you just want to eat them.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's an art to eating them too, so that you eat them and don't get burned
right yeah.
yourself. But
do they teach
so
you this when you go
good.
There
and it's like yeah it's like, what am I supposed to do? No, Google it. They don't. Google it before you go so you don't give yourself a third degree burn. But they're so good. And so I actually just order a whole bunch of those as my meal because I just want to eat those. And then they have Szechuan green beans, which are so good if you've ever had. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
I love
Szechuan green beans. Theirs are excellent because they're not too greasy. Because you know what? Sometimes Chinese food can, when it's not good, can get greasy. And that's when you know it's like, nope, this is not
right. And that hurts my stomach.
This is not right. Mm-hmm. And because it's not supposed to be greasy. And so that they have excellent of that. And then also they have some like fish hot pots, Szechuan with tons of chilies and stuff like that. Which are excellent. So I love that place.
Now I'm hungry to try that.
I also love Broder's.
Hold on. Number four.
Oh, okay. Broder's. best pasta in town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like homemade. So good. I've never had a bad meal there. I love their gnocchi too because they do like seasonal rotations and stuff, right? So it'll be like different types, not just plain stuff. And so I love that place. You said anywhere in the world. Okay,
you got to do number three. Carrie's on a roll.
She's on a roll.
I am. Oh, when you get me going on food, I mean, I'll give you 10.
Yeah. Number three.
Okay, so this is kind of bougie, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Oh, we love bougie.
So Chicago.
Yeah, tell me more.
Because we used to live there, right? So, and this is a good memory too. It has like some sentimental attachment. Alinea, which is an amazing James Beard award-winning, very difficult to get into still, even many years later. But an amazing restaurant because it was one of the early ones in the U.S. anyway, doing that whole gastromolecular gastronomy. And so just taking food and then really breaking it down into these different it's playful. So it's really fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's not like French Laundry, which is also like an amazing place, but very serious.
More proper.
It has a vibe, you know?
I could never get in with a hoodie.
It's like, you're not, And so like, Alinea is just, it's the total experience, but it's also, it's only in a, chef's tasting. So it's like, you don't know what you're getting. You just sit down and you just enjoy this experience and you're being there for 3 hours and it's insane, but it's just, you're eating with all your senses. Mm-hmm. And so,
have you ever gone to Travail?
Yes. So, and I love Travail.
We love, Travail is one of our favorite places. Yes. And we always think at the beginning, it's like, there's this like scarcity, like, this is all we get. Like, we're not going to.
These tiny little
pieces. But then by the end, you're
stuffed.
You're travailed.
13 plates later. You're just, and they're like.
Because it just keeps coming. Yeah. It just keeps coming.
We got two more courses. Yeah. I hate you. Yeah. Keep coming. It's so good.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, eating is like, it's like the whole live to eat or eat to live.
Yes.
And I'm like, no, live to eat. It's like, because I get joy out of it because it's the. And when you go to a place that you know is going to be excellent, I enjoy the food as much as I enjoy the experience of knowing that, like, I don't have to think about anything because I'm just trusting that these chefs are just gonna do something amazing, and they always do.
They do.
That's one thing that I've picked up as well is when
maybe it's because we're D's on the disc profile, but when I have a hard time going to a place knowing that I could possibly cook this better, but then I go to a place like Travail or Nouvelle or somebody's, and I'm like, they are next level, and I will try anything they put in front of me. Like, I don't like mushrooms, but if they put mushrooms in front of me, I'm going to trust them and I'm going to try it. I don't like fish. I won't do the fish, actually, but there's other things like oysters, and they've put other stuff in front of me, and I'm like, I'm going to give it a shot just because I know they're so darn good.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. So, I would say that's for sure a favorite. Another place.
Number two.
Well, another place around here, Hi Hi.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you know that, I love Hi Hi. I think it's fun, it's casual, and it's also like, I don't know, there's something about it that it's like a little twist on traditional Asian food. And so they, and plus for me, again, dining out is also ambiance.
Yep.
And so I'm just like, I just love that you go in there and you just feel like
you're in a different place.
Yeah. It's like I'm transported. It's a fun night out. Yep. And it's always got good energy in there.
Yep.
And the service is friendly. So yeah. I love Hi Hi. And I was really, we went there a lot actually during COVID because they had a thing where you could eat outside too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then we started getting the habit of doing a lot of takeout from there, which is tough because that's actually kind of a haul from where we live, but
yeah.
So by the time you get back, it's like it's not always hot, but it was worth it. And they're the same people who own Ola Repa, which is also really good.
I didn't
but
know
I'm
that.
Not counting this one of mine. I'm just giving a side plug.
Just, okay,
that's so like number 2B.
2B.
2A and 2B. 2A.
I can't argue with you. All right. So what is going to be not necessarily your number one, but just like number one?
Oh no, I know the pressure of a number.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you get it wrong, I'm going to tell everybody.
I'm trying to think too. I was like, well, okay. If I'm being honest, and I have to say, because this is it's local and supporting a local chef here too, who's amazing, which I'm sure people on the podcast will know if you care about food at all. Gavin Kaysen, his place Demi, probably the best place I've ever eaten in the Twin Cities.
Really?
We have not eaten there.
No.
Really?
We've gone to.
Didn't we have reservations once and we couldn't go?
I don't remember, but I've heard nothing but amazing things about Demi.
Because if you like that whole thing of just trust and you can say what things, you know, dietary restrictions sounds like the fish would be a no for you. They will work around it. And it's just because, again, it's the experience because it's a counter too. So like you see them making everything.
That's what I love.
That.
And it's
love
so
that.
Fun to see because they're so with precision and they're so, and then the chef will come and talk to you and it's just, and to me, we don't have anything. My husband and I always say, it's like, we don't have anything until he did that. We didn't have anything like that here in the Twin Cities. And so for me, it's more like a point of pride to supporting that we have that kind of thing going here because it is special and we're lucky to have that kind of talent in the Twin Cities. And it's the kind of place you don't go all the time. I mean, but it's for me, it's like special occasion.
Yes. It's fact, a treat. Yeah.
When I got my job at Mar, and I knew I was going to leave my other job, I went there with a girlfriend to celebrate.
So see, I love that.
It's just
that.
Like those kind of places have memories attached to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know?
Yeah, you just don't go there on a random Tuesday
night. Yeah, you're
not
like, hey, I just feel like going and sitting for a 3-hour meal and like spending a bunch of money. It was like, for me, those places are special because they're amazing experiences, but usually you're sharing it with somebody because
there's something
special going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. All right, well, now I'm going to have to see when Demi has availability.
I'm surprised you haven't booked it already.
Well, the camera held me back.
Did it? Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been absolutely amazing to get to know you a little bit more. Anything you want to say?
Well, the only thing I wanted to add was, Carrie, yes, thank you so much for coming. We were at an event. All of us were together at an event on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
And what kept coming up was how fortunate we are to have you in our world and how fortunate we are to have you like leading the helm at Mar. Mm-hmm. Even though you say it's because of the team, yes, but it's because of the leadership that the team can actually step up. So we really appreciate you. And
thank you.
We're so glad that you're here.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad to be here. I love it. And I love getting to work with folks like you. I mean, I think it's a unique role because of realtors and working with realtors are unique folks. And like,
you don't
I just love.
That's, thank you for putting that nicely.
No, I love it. That's what drew me to it. Honestly. I mean, you can hear I'm unique too. We all have our own, you know, oddities. And I think these are when I interviewed, I could tell, I was like, oh, these are my people. And I love your entrepreneurial spirit, as a whole. And that you two have and the passion that those of you who are really good at this have for giving back and for working with people. Like that's what I found in common. And so, I'm just glad that it's working out and that people are enjoying what they're seeing because I'm having a good time doing it.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, as always, we out. Deuces.
Thanks for having me on.
Tune in each week for more in-depth conversations about life behind the highlight reel. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform to make sure you never miss an episode. For today's show notes, head over to lbthr.com.